From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Well, this morning we're speaking with New York Times bestselling author Jeff Hobbs, a really interesting bit of a lot of research he did into four boys in second largest school district in the nation in Los Angeles, and chronicles their lives and their experience in high school. When we return, don't go away.
Matt here from San Francisco Design, supporting our local radio station, KPCW. Since 1990, San Francisco Design offers interior design and a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings with store locations in Salt Lake City and Park City on Bonanza Drive. On the web at sanfrandesign.com, San Francisco Design, love your home.
Four teenage boys are high school seniors at two very different schools within the city of Los Angeles, the second largest school district in the nation with nearly 700,000 students. New York Times bestselling author Jeff Hobbs writes his with heart, sensitivity, and insight captures the challenges and triumphs of being a young person confronting their future in a contemporary America. His story chronicles the paths of a son of undocumented workers, the son of a demanding helicopter mom, a privileged yet somewhat directionless high schooler, and an inspiring engineer. Jeff Hobbs joins us to talk about his new book based on his research, Show Them You're Good. Welcome, Mr. Hobbs.
Oh, thank you guys so much for having me. It's real special to be here with you.
It's an honor to have a best-selling author and an advocate for those in the marginalized communities here to discuss your book. What I really want to I just want to know this, like, most people would never return to high school. It was, you know, for some a traumatic experience, for others glorious. And yet, after writing many books, you decide to put your pants back on and backpack on your pack and go into two schools in the biggest one of the biggest school districts in the nation. Either you're crazy or you're inspirational. Why did you do that?
Well, it was in no way sort of Bruce Springsteen glory days scenario for me. My high school years were nice but pretty unremarkable. No need to revisit. I mostly just felt old. But what happened was the last book I wrote, also nonfiction, was called The Short and Tragic Life of Robert Peace, about a very close friend of mine who passed. And that was a hard book for many reasons. But something happened when it came out that was very terrifying to me for all the reasons you just stated, which was that schools, mostly high schools, started inviting me to come visit. And speak to assemblies and visit classes kind of all across the country, all kinds of different spaces, private schools, inner city, mostly inner city public schools. And in these conversations, what happened, again, all across the country is that young people, particularly young boys, were compelled for whatever reason to sort of stand and share little bits of their own stories and their own aspirations. And it was meaningful. And I heard a lot of wisdom sort of through their eyes. And wisdom is not something we often associate with teenage boys. And so that was powerful. And I don't know, I thought this moment in time in our country, this was 2016, 17 school year, I thought there just might be some positive value in seeing that moment, again, from the perspectives of these kind of young, bright, striving people. And that's where the year started for me.
So as an author, as a writer, and you're visiting all these schools, what stood out for you with these students that you continued to work with and shadow and then write about, What stood out about them that made you select this high school, this district, and these boys, men?
It's a good question, and it speaks to very much to the clumsiness of the kind of work I do. So the first thing to note is that no school or principal in his or her right mind wants some journalist wandering around their hallways, because schools get dinged a lot by journalists. So it took a lot of trust, and I don't know. I'm grateful, but for whatever reason, these two schools in two very, very different neighborhoods in Los Angeles, where I live, kind of opened their doors and introduced me to some students, none of whom were handpicked by me in any way. It was just students who decided that they were willing to spend an awful lot of their time during a year when they didn't have much time, when they were applying to colleges and kind of figuring out what the rest of their lives were going to look like in some sense, decided that they would hang out with a pretty awkward middle-aged guy throughout the year. And so they came from very different backgrounds, very different parent environments, home environments. And so there were differences and disparities all over the place. We're talking about Compton, California, and Beverly Hills, California. So the differences were myriad.
Yeah.
But I focused as much as I could on commonality, and there was a lot of that too.
So interesting. From Compton to Beverly Hills. If you're just joining us, our guest is best-selling author Jeff Hobbs. He's back with a new book called Show Them Your Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels. And so interesting, the one that grasps my attention to begin with is Carlos, who is the son of an undocumented father and probably mother, and yet he is aspiring to attend an Ivy League college, as did his older brother. Talk about, how privilege, lack thereof, fighting your way, growing resilience as the son of undocumented workers, that whole thing that Carlos had going on.
Carlos, I mean, like I said, I didn't hand pick any of these guys. I certainly didn't walk into a school and ask to meet a boy who didn't speak English when he started elementary school and 12 years later was applying for deferred action for childhood arrivals at the same time as he was applying to Yale and Harvard and Princeton. Again, he just decided to hang out, and you would never know any of these things about him from talking to him, because he's very humble, he's very understated, which I appreciate. But the quietly resilient kids tend to be the most resilient of all, and that certainly suits him. So he was carrying all this weight of kind of his neighborhood and his school and being this bright guy and representing all those narratives in the world. And at the same time, he was dealing with classmates, kids he'd grown up with who were suddenly a little resentful that he was reaching these heights with a kind of, again, because he's quiet, it all seemed sort of effortless to the people around him, even though it wasn't, because he worked really hard. And it was as if he had some kind of secret that his family was withholding from the people around him. And I asked him about that and what it was like to just deal with all that friction, even in the midst of all these triumphs. I asked him, if there was a secret. And he said, yeah, the secret is my parents read to me when I was a kid We have family dinners every night. We try to talk about ideas and not gossip about people. They set expectations without rewards. Basically, he outlined any sort of basic parenting book you'd ever find and said, my parents, you know, did that. They were normal. And I thought that was pretty powerful.
That is extremely powerful. And juxtapose that with Owen, who was raised presumably in the Beverly Hills area. He's comes from a wealthy family and yet is, you know, a little maybe without direction. Maybe that's how I interpret it. But he's not very serious about academics. What went on there with the different parenting message?
Owen, I'm glad you asked about him because I'm really fond of him and I admire him. Owen is kind of the portrait of a Beverly Hills kid from the outside in that his parents are both very successful Hollywood creative people. He lives in a big house, and he'll always have a big house to go home to no matter what. And yeah, he struggled to kind of come to terms with high school socially and also academically, because, you know, ostensibly you're in school to find the thing that lights your mind on fire, but you mostly have to take classes that don't necessarily do that. And because he's privileged and he knows he's privileged, you know, he can rebel a little bit and there's no great stakes. But at the same time, you know, he's just trying to figure out how to be a decent person, knowing, you know, and to have serious thoughts. And he knows that nobody's going to take those thoughts seriously because he is a rich kid from Beverly Hills with good parents. And I think a really important thing about his life that, like Carlos, you wouldn't learn just from talking to him because he's also pretty quiet, and teenage boys in general aren't that
effusive,
eager to share their vulnerabilities. But his mom was very sick, Owen's mom, starting in eighth grade. She's basically bedridden with something of a mysterious but very painful illness. And so, you know, he knows about fate and, you know, he knows about randomness and challenges. And every night after school or evening, while other friends are going to the mall or playing video games in their basements, he would go home and just sit in the dark next to his mom and tell her about his mostly uneventful day and just try to make her laugh.
And I love that your message was to show the commonality, and you're linking that. Why is it that we have, as an audience, want to see the differences, and yet as the writer, you want to show the commonality of all the individuals?
Well, I risk. Thanks for asking that, and yeah, that's sort of the center of whatever this work is, immersion journalism, I think it's called. But you know, your goal is always to undermine presumptions. And kind of like you said, people don't often like their presumptions to be undermined because we make presumptions because it helps simplify the world and make it easier to navigate, so to speak. So we put people in boxes, and sometimes that's helpful, and a lot of the time it's really not. But you know, I guess I was working under the conceit that any of these boys could have been college roommates the following year at, say, UCLA or Riverside or anywhere really. And you know, there are all these intersections in the world and in life, and they're important. And I think the most important thing, I think, in raising my own kids and being married and all that, is just to understand that we don't all experience each moment in the same way.
So it seems that you're kind of, I'll use the term intersectionality, where that we can all have this possibility of you know, crossing paths with those who come from different frameworks and yet showing our commonality. And by contrast, though, show them you're good, your title is, I don't know, it doesn't seem to resonate that. Why did you pick that title? Because it comes across as like a justification statement.
That's interesting. Titles are hard for me in particular. I don't know why. And we went through a lot. But show them you're good. It came from something another one of the students said. His name was Tio. I'm also a great admirer of his. He was Carlos's classmate, had a much harder academic road, and at home he was dealing with his father's alcoholism and his father's general derision of school. And you know, he speaks about these things so casually that it's jolting. But mostly what Tio talked about was skateboarding. Mm-hmm. Well, skateboarding and arguments he was having with his girlfriend, but mostly skateboarding. And he was just on a monologue, and he was talking about how you go to a skate park and it's very territorial and hierarchical, somewhat like America, let's say. And you go and, you know, everybody wants you to leave. Everyone, he said, his words, everybody's hating on you, trying to make you look weak until you show them you're good. Mm. Which when he said it, again, it was just an offhand remark. I wrote it down, but it didn't really register. And then, you know, going back through thousands of pages of notes and transcripts, it just seemed like they were a lot of layers there, particularly in terms of American aspiration and this very centric idea in high schools of self-determination. So we, better or worse, we landed on show them you're good.
Yeah, that's the part that kind of intrinsically, you know, caught my attention based on some of your thoughts is, show them you're good kind of comes across as you said, a hierarchical like achievement, but the underlying tone of your book is this commonality of it, whether we're achieving or not, no matter our background, there is, you know, I would say almost there is good in all the boys, you know. I don't know, that's interesting. It just stood out to me.
Just wanted to make a comment. Some years ago, a friend of mine ran a therapeutic boarding school, and I asked him, you know, what percentage of the time is it, you know, the parents who have screwed up, and, you know, such that their kids end up in this therapeutic boarding school? And he said, 90% of the time. And I just think it's interesting that the parents play such a big role in your book, the kid, you know, with the kids. And you talk about how Tio's father is an alcoholic and doesn't believe in him. And then there is John, whose mother is, well, we said in the intro, a helicopter mom, but she's pushing him, even though he is bright. He's on an academic decathlon. And but he's also got some issues surrounding the too much pressure. Could you just comment on that the whole parenting piece?
Yeah, I loved meeting it was so interesting to meet the guys, the students first, and spend significant time with them and kind of wonder what hear about their parents, but kind of wonder what their parents were like. Again, particularly as a parent myself with younger kids. And then actually meet the parents and spend time. And I should say that I thought it was very courageous of all these parents, some of whom didn't speak English, to give permission for their sons to be in this work and and really be vulnerable and to be in the work themselves. And this is definitely not a parenting book. So, for instance, if you want to write a book about helicopter parents, of which there's many, they're not hard to find. You can go, you know, meet some helicopter parents and write about them. And these guys came from kind of the full range. There was under parenting and some neglect. There was over parenting. There was kind of very tender parenting. There was tough parenting, and it was neat to sort of see the chemistry of all this manifest in the boys and their special personalities. But you mentioned John, who has a Chinese mother and a Jewish father, and he kind of lives in these torrents of Eastern shame culture and Western guilt culture. And like a lot of Beverly Hills students, which is probably surprising to many people, he lives in a very small apartment that they struggle to afford specifically so that he can go through this this pretty good public high school system. And so, yeah, most of his ranting and venting during our meetings had to do with, you know, his mom and his face about the piano and all this. And he stated many times that he wished his life were not such a cliche with the overbearing Chinese mother. I think I asked him if he'd ever read the book Battle Hymnal of the Tiger Mom, the Amy Chua,
yeah,
sort of celebration of Chinese culture as manifested in parenting. And he said, I don't have to read that book because I'm living that book. But what was touching was that his journey through that year as he applied to college with the goal of getting as far away from his parents as he could afford to, was him figuring out that a lot of the friction that exists between parents and their children, especially in small spaces, it comes from love.
Yeah, really great point. Okay, just 15 seconds left before we've got to let you go. What was the biggest parenting, you know, tip that you picked up doing all of this research, or what do you now carry with you as a parent?
Oh, sure. It's sort of simple, but I mean, the best thing and the worst thing about teenagers is that they tell you exactly what they think of you, and they don't care what you think of them. And I think in that mix, it's sort of easy to get caught up in this kind of oppositional force. But what really stood out was how laser attuned they all were to kind of adult hypocrisy.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the small version of that is adults who look up from their phone just long enough to tell their kids that they spend too much time on their phone.
Right.
No, the bigger, deeper ones have to do with, you know, you tell your kid to be open-hearted and non-judgmental, and then, you know, they overhear anything you say about the neighbor that's judgy.
Yeah. Jeff, we've got to let you run. Jeff Hobbs,
yeah.
And the book is Show Them You're Good, A Portrait of Boys in the City of Angels. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you guys so much. It means a lot.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.